2 weeks' notice. Written by Raz Ilased. Read by Jenna Corinth. Merlin makes a damn good cup of coffee. Of course, he likes to think he has other talents too. It only takes him 5 seconds to find virtually any file in the disaster area, otherwise known as his cubicle at the Volunteer Centre. He has been known to design sugar packet towers of truly dizzying heights when bored. And he can tie a cherry stem into a double knot with his tongue. He greatly enjoyed showing off the last one at parties, until Gwen gently informed him it was tantamount to offering blowjobs to complete strangers. And then he couldn't ever do it again in public without suffering a horrible, full body blush from his feet to his ears. At least, not while sober. It is, however, his talent at making the perfect cup of coffee that makes him the most proud. Especially because he gets paid for it. Single grand, half-calf, non-fat white mocha, Merlin called out the order and snapped a lid over the steaming cup. He set it on the counter in front of the half-awake girl wearing a University of London sweater, then moved on to the bleary-eyed businessman. The smithy, presumably named after the absentee owner, some overexcitable, flighty bloke named John Smith, walked the fine line between over-commercialised chain cafes and scary indie coffee houses that blasted Enya all day and were populated by nothing but hippie lesbians. As such, they had a relatively even mix of clientele, which made for a rather smooth, if slightly boring, workday. Merlin, however, simply liked the fact that they sold only organically grown coffee and that he got to drink it for free. Merlin handed the tall, plain latte to the grateful businessman and wiped his hands on his electric blue apron. Really, he suspected the colour did more to shock the customers awake than their morning caffeine jolt. He glanced at the steadily growing line of morning pre-caffeinated zombies, and then at the clock above the espresso machine. Shit! He cursed, frantically pulling at the knot of his apron. It was stubbornly uncooperative, so Merlin opted to attempt removal over his head. It got caught first on his name tag, which was already tangled with the scarf around his neck, and then on one ear. But that was pretty much inevitable and par for the course. Gwen, I'm really sorry, but I've got to go, he called, trying to extricate his gangly limbs from their fight to the death with the blasted apron. Already? Gwen called from the stockroom, sounding rather harried. He guessed she still hadn't finished morning inventory. They were short-staffed and Merlin had come in early to help her out, but if he didn't leave now, he'd be late. Yeah, sorry, he called again, but his voice was muffled by the tangle of blue material around his head. He finally managed to wiggle free, only to find Gwen standing in front of him, her amused expression telling him that in its battle with the apron, his hair had likely lost spectacularly. He didn't care about that, however, because in each hand Gwen was holding 20 ounces of steamy, frothy goodness. I figured you and Lance could use a little pick-me-up before the protest, she smiled. Gwen, I could kiss you, he gushed, accepting her offering with the reverence it deserved. She laughed. Take my late shift next week and we'll call it even. And remind that boyfriend of mine that our anniversary's tomorrow. Knowing Lance, he's probably forgotten and has plans that night to launch a personal crusade to save the spotted dolphins or something. Done and done, Merlin replied cheerfully, making his way to the door. He managed 5 steps before Gwen's voice called out again, And when he turned, she was waving a stack of bright orange pamphlets at him and shaking her head in exasperation. He grinned as she tucked them under his left elbow. "Gwen, you're a queen," he said brightly. "Funny, I thought that was you," Gwen answered with a teasing twist of her mouth. "Now get moving, you're late as it is." "Right, see you tonight," he called over his shoulder, and then heroically prevented dropping everything in a colossal mess as he practically fell out of the door in his haste. Working at the smithy may have paid Merlin's bills, but it wasn't Merlin's passion. That particular honour was reserved for Merlin's time spent volunteering for the United Kingdom Organisation for the Restoration of Nature. The organisation suffered the unfortunate and acronymically challenged nickname of Unicorn. But Merlin rather liked it, as evidenced by the fact that he had chosen to wear his favourite t-shirt to the rally. It was navy blue with the organisation's stylised unicorn logo on the chest. The early autumn chill really necessitated that he wear something a bit more substantial, but Merlin was proud of his shirt. He'd won it for having the most signatures in the Save the Water Vole petition. Lance had one too, and Merlin sometimes wondered how someone as glaringly hetero as Lance could wear the shirt without even a hint of irony. Merlin suspected it might have something to do with the way Lance regarded it more as a coat of arms, having practically taken an oath of fealty to uphold the code of Unicorn. Namely, to stop big companies like the Pendragon Corporation from stamping out all the wildlife in Britain. As soon as the organisation had learned that the Pendragon Corporation had plans to buy up a major plot of crucial, undeveloped natural land and was planning on turning it into a bloody shopping centre, of all things, the organisation had done all they could to fight the sale. Lancelot had fought with his customary zeal for justice, and Merlin had worked his magic behind the scenes. That is to say, fetching and filing, and manning the phones. But he liked to think he was crucial to the operation. But still, the sale had gone through. Today was the day the sale became final, thus the very public protest being held this morning in front of the Pendragon building. Merlin readjusted the flyers under his arm, careful not to spill the piping hot coffees, and looked up to see the crosswalk light had changed. He stepped off the curb and caught sight of Lance rallying the crowd, waving over everyone's heads as he caught sight of Merlin. Merlin grinned back, eyes on Lance, and, in typical Merlin fashion, forgetting to watch where he was going. And that's when it all went to hell. Arthur stepped through the sleek glass door and out into the grey London sunshine. Of course, with the day Arthur was having, it figured that the moment he stepped out of the office, his mobile rang. Excalibur model, very pricey, and not even released to the public yet. Just when Arthur thought his day couldn't get any worse, he looked at the caller ID and realised he was wrong. Arthur contemplated not answering, but she'd know. His demonic witch of a stepsister seemed to know everything. It was damned creepy. He pressed the green talk button, and before he even had a chance to utter his typical sarcastic greeting, Morgana's voice demanded clearly through the line, "Arthur, where do you think you're going?" Arthur craned his neck and glared up towards the distant top floors of the high-rise, where all of the executive offices of the Pendragon Corporation were located. "Bloody hell, how can you even see me from way up there?" Morgana's smirk was audible. "I've tapped into my mystical visionary powers." "So, you've hacked the CCTV feeds again." "You still haven't answered my question." That's because it's still none of your business. Since he doubted Morgana could see the scowl on the security cameras, Arthur instead directed it to the crowd gathered in the courtyard in front of the Pendragon building. Bloody protesters. Arthur, is now really the time for another of your trysts? Like you have room to talk. At least I keep my affairs out of the office. Mostly. There had been that one instance with Owain from marketing, and that other disaster with Sophia. Liar. Arthur frowned at the crosswalk light, willing it to change so he could make his escape. Was there a point to this phone call, or are you just stalking me for the fun of it? Actually, Uther wanted me to remind you about your 10 o'clock meeting with the zoning department. Arthur groaned in the back of his throat. The only thing that kept Arthur from clenching his jaw hard enough to crack his teeth was that the light had finally changed. Quickly, he stepped off the curb and made a hasty escape. I'm well aware of my duties, Morgana. This was the second time today that Uther had reminded him about the land development being finalised. The project that Arthur, not his father, was in charge of overseeing. Tell my father I'll be there, he sighed. Without so much as a goodbye, he clicked his phone shut and was promptly drenched in two large cups of scalding hot coffee. Arthur's yell of pain was followed rapidly by an attempt to peel the soiled Armani shirt away from his chest before it burned itself into his skin. You idiot! He roared, frantically checking his Excalibur to make sure it had miraculously survived the moron's bumbling thoughtlessness. Oh my God, I am so sorry, the idiot stammered. I didn't mean to, I was just walking and I wasn't. Arthur looked at the moron for the first time since the collision, casting him the most withering glare in his arsenal. The one that made even executive VPs cringe in fear. The idiot just stared back, blue eyes wide and unapologetic, under an unruly mop of black hair that did nothing to disguise his enormous ears. The boy was wearing some ridiculous unicorn t-shirt over his scrawny frame, and, dear God, was that actually a neckerchief? Arthur didn't know fashion sense that bad even existed. I'll pay for the cleaning bill, the idiot said, still waving his hands in some bizarre manner apparently meant to convey either, I'm sorry, or I'm about to have a seizure. It was difficult to tell. You couldn't possibly afford the cleaning bill, Arthur scoffed. This shirt is worth more than your life. Without a moment's thought, he reached out and snatched the hideous scarf from the moron's neck and began using it to scrub futilely at the stain. Hey! I'm doing you a favour, trust me, Arthur said, still trying to manfully rescue his shirt from its inevitable doom. Look, you don't have to be such a prat, the idiot said, sounding decidedly less apologetic. It was an accident and my shirt's ruined too. Ha! Arthur retorted, casting a disparaging glance at the ridiculous unicorn emblem. You should be grateful that the fashion gods saw fit to... But then Arthur got a good look at the shirt and paused. He glanced at the throng of protesters. Then he glanced back at the hideous shirt. Then he noticed, for the first time, the neon orange flyers scattered all over the middle of the street and drenched in the remains of the spilled coffee. Oh my God, he blurted. You're one of them. What? Them! Arthur gestured emphatically at the swarm of people picketing his company and chanting and handing out more of those blindingly orange flyers. Those crazy Greenpeace PETA, whatever you call yourselves, reactionaries. That's you. The idiot crossed his arms peevishly. We're called the United Kingdom Organization for the Restoration of Nature, actually. You're the ones who've been protesting my company all week. Your company? What do you... The man's eyes widened comically. Oh God. You're Arthur Pendragon. Don't try to pretend like you don't know who I am after you just attempted to assault me during a protest. I could have you arrested. Arrested? It was just a bit of coffee. Yes, boiling hot coffee. You nearly melted my skin off. But the moron wasn't even paying attention anymore. He was busy staring at something over Arthur's shoulder. Arthur, I think we should... Don't think. You're clearly not cut out for it, Arthur interrupted acidly. You know, I've half a mind to call in the riot squad to put a stop to your pathetic protest, but attracting that kind of publicity would just be doing you lot a favour. If you thought for one second that my company would be cowed by some harebrained assault, obviously intended as an ill-conceived publicity stunt, you are sadly mistaken. Arthur, wait until my lawyers get a hold of this. Your pathetic organisation won't know what hit you. You won't even see it coming. Arthur, the idiot shouted. Then he tackled Arthur to the pavement, just as a huge red double-decker bus rumbled past. Speaking of not seeing things coming, the idiot griped, unnecessarily smug, and obviously unconcerned that he'd just struck Arthur's head against the asphalt. Arthur groaned, one hand coming up to gingerly cup the back of his own head. If there was blood and Arthur had to get the back of his head shaved for stitches, he was going to sue for irreparable psychological damage. He rather liked his hair. He worked hard to keep it this shiny. He was relieved when he felt no blood oozing between his fingers, only the beginnings of a small lump. If you're still trying to convince me that this isn't an assault, you're doing a terrible job of it. Arthur opened his eyes to meet an incredulous glare. You have got to be the biggest prat I have ever met. I just saved you from being hit by a bus. Don't expect that to keep me from pressing charges. And perhaps Arthur had hit his head a little bit harder than he initially thought, because when the idiot rolled his eyes in exasperation, Arthur was suddenly struck by how very bright blue they were. From there, it was a natural progression to notice the pink mouth, poised, inches from his own, and the weight of the body pressing surprisingly comfortably against his chest. And when exactly had his hands settled against the man's hips? The man seemed to realise their position at the same time as Arthur, but he didn't move away, and Arthur didn't move to shove him off. The moment hung heavy and awkward between them. And also, maybe Arthur was suffering from a bit of shock as well as the concussion, because very belatedly, the realisation slammed into him like, well, like a very bad pun. Oh my God, I almost got hit by a bus. The idiot rolled off him with an infuriated groan, and Arthur suddenly remembered how to breathe. He prayed for unconsciousness, but he knew it wouldn't save him from his fate. He'd give it a good hour or so before Morgana would have copies of the CCTV tapes of his near-death experience and heroic rescue at the hands of the world's worst-dressed idiot circulating through the office like wildfire. He'd never live this down. And that was how, in a freak spat of gratefulness and generosity, Uther Pendragon wound up offering Merlin Emrys a job as Arthur's personal assistant. You're not going to take the job, are you? Gwen said that night, eyeing Merlin hopefully from across the dining room table of the tiny apartment she and Lance shared. I mean, obviously you're not. The man's a bully, you've said so yourself, so, I mean, of course you're not taking it, obviously. She paused, raising one dubious eyebrow. Right? Merlin shrugged, trying not to look guilty and confused and inexplicably excited. But he was a terrible liar. Gwen gasped. Look, it's not like I'm going to turn into one of Pendragon's mindless yuppies or anything, but I'll be working closely with the man in charge of the land development deal we've spent the last 4 months fighting. Maybe I can work out a way to convince him to call it off, or at least not build a bloody shopping centre in the middle of land that should be a nature reserve. Gwen looked supremely unconvinced. So, you'll be working from the inside, like a spy? Yes, exactly. What Merlin refrained from mentioning was the fact that in addition to being the head of the land development deal and the world's most pompous arse, Arthur Pendragon was also bloody gorgeous. Well, at least until he opened his mouth and any number of prattly things came tumbling out. Still, Merlin was not above admitting to himself that getting to see Britain's most eligible bachelor every day, up close, was one hell of a job perk. It might even make up for the fact that Merlin would be forced to put up with the man for longer than 5 minutes at a time. But more than that, Merlin felt like this was something he had to do. Like there was a reason behind it. He hated to start sounding like his mother and mentioning things like destiny and fate. But it wasn't every day that Merlin ran into potentially helpful and powerful men on the street. Well, okay. Merlin actually did run into people on a fairly regular basis, but none of them had ever been Arthur bloody Pendragon. There was no logical reason for Merlin to think he could change the man's mind, but he felt like he at least had to try. Merlin's thoughts were interrupted when Gwen asked, Merlin, are you sure you can manage something like that? Not that I don't think you could do it, or that I think you need to be MI5 material or anything, because you're clearly not. Gwen's eyes widened and she rushed on. I mean, that's good that you're not. I mean, because if you were MI5 material, we'd never have met, because you'd be doing something much better than working at the smithy. Not that it's not a good job, clearly, but it's better than skiving for a corporate bully. That is, She looked desperate to shut herself up, and Merlin took pity on her. Lance, what do you think? He asked hopefully. Lancelot placed a hand gravely on Merlin's shoulder and said, with only minimal sarcasm, I think it's brave and admirable to venture into the belly of the beast. You will die a noble death. Merlin sighed and face planted into the table. On Merlin's first day at the Pendragon Corporation, he was kept waiting in the giant and ostentatious lobby for an hour. Apparently Arthur was in a meeting or something. Merlin didn't mind. He wasn't exactly in a rush to start working for Executive Vice President Prattface. He had spent most of the time staring at the poster on the wall above the receptionist's head, which was apparently meant as a parody of those motivational posters you've seen in similar office buildings. It showed a picture of the Great Pyramids and underneath, Achievement. You can do anything you set your mind to when you have vision, determination, and an endless supply of expendable labour. Merlin had a sinking suspicion that the poster was not being used with the sense of irony that was intended. He was actually starting to nod off when a gorgeous woman with long, dark hair and a blazing expression burst into the room, walked up to him and said, Arthur's an ass. Merlin just boggled at her. If she was expecting any argument from him, she'd certainly come to the wrong place. Besides, even if he'd wanted to object, it seemed all the sections of his brain previously designated for speech had been hijacked in the epic effort not to notice the spectacular cleavage visible in her low-cut blouse. "He's not in a meeting," she clarified. "In fact, he's not doing anything right now except sulking in his office like a spoiled brat." She graced him with a smile that was both cunning and gleefully evil. "I'll just take you to see him, shall I?" She turned on her expensive Italian heel and stalked off. Merlin could only assume he was meant to follow her. She led him down long corridors of shining glass and steel, filled with bustling people dressed in designer suits. Merlin tugged at the suddenly too tight collar of his own simple blue shirt and red tie, which he'd gotten off the sale rack at the local Primark. He was so busy trying to take everything in that he stumbled into her back when she stopped in front of a large, rather imposing reception desk. Sorry, he muttered. She smiled, apparently finding his clumsiness more endearing than annoying. "This'll be your desk," she said kindly. "I trust it suits your needs sufficiently." Marilyn's eyes widened, taking in the massive desk that was bigger than his bed at home, the computer monitor the size of a flat-screen TV, and the rather comfortable-looking leather chair. "Are you joking? I'd like to move in." Her lips curled wryly, and she gestured to the rather dramatic set of doors behind the desk. "You'll have to take that up with Arthur." Merlin stared at what he now assumed to be the doors to Arthur's office, and his heart sank. On one door was another large poster, this time of a magnificent regal lion above the blazing word, "Importance." Underneath, in stark white lettering, it read, "Vanish from my sight, peons." Right, so, definitely not ironic then. The woman completely ignored the message on the door and pushed them open without bothering to knock. Merlin had just enough time to take in the sight of a desk twice the size of Merlin's and an office the size of a small country before the high-backed chair swiveled around, and Merlin's vision was suddenly filled with only golden hair and vivid blue eyes framed by sleek, wire-rimmed glasses. And really, Merlin should not still find the man as beautiful as he had when he'd first met him, now that he knew what an insufferable, infuriating arse he was. "Morgana," Arthur snapped. "Do you mind? I'm in the middle of..." He stopped, spotting Merlin in the doorway. "Oh," he said flatly, "it's you." Arthur tried not to look surprised at the sight of his new assistant standing in his doorway, wearing an even more idiotic expression than the last time he'd seen the man. He would have expected the bloody moron to have stormed out of the reception area in a huff by now. Morgana radiated smug satisfaction as she said, "I thought I'd take it upon myself to welcome your new protégé, since you couldn't be arsed to do it." Arthur clenched his jaw. "He's not my protégé. He's my assistant. And don't you have more important things to do than go poking around my business? Though I don't really consider snogging half the staff important." Morgana turned to his assistant and said genially, "Don't mind him, Merlin. He gets cranky when other people are getting laid more than him."
"Morgana!"
"What?" "It's the truth," she replied innocently.
"Just get out of here. I think you've been quite helpful enough for today."
Arthur rather insistently walked her out of the office, pausing when they got to the door to eye Morgana's attire. At least that explained his new assistant's current slack-jawed state. "And for God's sake, Morgana, cover those up. He'll be absolutely useless to me if you destroy his brain with your breasts." Morgana smirked and looked over Arthur's shoulder. "Relax, Arthur. It's not my ass he's staring at right now." Morgana exited with a flourish,
Anne Arthur turned around sharply to catch the line of Merlin's gaze just before it flicked up to Arthur's face. Merlin's face flushed pink and his eyebrows climbed up to his forehead. He started. And all it took was that one syllable before Arthur decided he really didn't want to deal with whatever clumsy explanation came tumbling from his new assistant's mouth. Right then, he interrupted. I need those reports copied, collated, and filed, he ordered, pointing to a massive stack of papers on his desk. And try not to get lost on your way to the copy machine. Merlin decided, later that day, when he was up to his armpits in shredded paper and had paper cuts all over his fingers and had ink stains all over his new tie, that either the copy machine was possessed by a furious army of Saxons, or Arthur was an evil, sadistic bastard. Probably both, given that all Arthur had to say for Merlin's hours of hard work was a condescending, "My God, can't you manage anything right? You look like you got molested by a toner cartridge." Halfway through the day, Arthur wondered why a crowd had assembled in the break room. He received his answer when he walked in to find Merlin tampering with the coffee machine. In any other office, this probably wouldn't have been a public spectacle. In the Pendragon Corporation, however, they had the Lexus of all coffee machines, a bloody behemoth that cost more than Arthur made in a month, and with enough bells and whistles that Arthur suspected the thing could launch satellites and take over the world, in addition to making coffee. It looked like a cross between the Death Star and the TARDIS controls. The thing even had levers. It had been a gift from a very grateful, very wealthy, and very eccentric client. Right next to the beast sat a very small, very simple Mr. Coffee, because no one in the office had a bloody clue how to work the other damn thing. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" Arthur bellowed, wondering if he'd arrived in time to prevent Merlin from inadvertently setting the self-destruct and blowing the entire bloody building to kingdom come. Merlin, however, just turned that idiotically blinding grin on him and said, "Relax, I'm a professional." Then he pulled a lever and pressed a few buttons, and the machine started making a truly terrifying noise. Merlin continued to blithely work the contraption as if channeling David Tennant, and with a great deal more twisting and shimmying of his hips than Arthur thought was strictly necessary. Arthur noticed nearly all of the women and a few of the men in the crowd were watching with avid interest. From the looks on their faces, it was as if Merlin was doing a bloody striptease, not making a cup of coffee. Abruptly, the noise shut off and Merlin turned, holding a steaming mug in his hand. He held it out to Arthur, with a raised eyebrow and a grin that was entirely too smug for his own good. "Want the first taste?" he offered. Arthur tentatively accepted the mug as if it contained nitroglycerin. After a moment's hesitation, he took his life into his hands and ventured a small sip. Then he took a larger one. Then he had to restrain himself from downing half the mug in one go. "Admit it," Merlin said, grin practically splitting his face in two. "I'm brilliant." Arthur frowned. "You're not completely useless, I suppose," he said, which the crowd apparently took as a ringing endorsement and began applauding Merlin like a conquering hero and clapping him on the shoulder in congratulations. Arthur noticed more than a few people's hands lingered longer than was really proper. Arthur decided he would leave the Mr. Coffee for the general staff, but the other appliance would have to be moved into Arthur's private conference room, strictly for productivity reasons. It wouldn't do to have his assistant put on an impromptu Chippendales show for the rest of the staff every time Merlin wanted a coffee for his break. By the end of the day, Merlin felt like an extra on Shaun of the Dead. All he needed was a cricket bat lodged in his skull to go along with his raging headache. Arthur still looked as fresh and crisp as his designer suit. "I trust you've already packed everything for the move?" Arthur asked, although it sounded more like a statement. Merlin's sluggish brain struggled to make sense of that, but all he could come up with was, what move? Arthur rolled his eyes heavenward as if praying for divine patience. Merlin had been doing something similar all day. "The move out of your own flat, you twit." Merlin suddenly felt much less tired. "I get a new flat." "Don't get too excited. It's just the spare bedroom. You'd be even more useless than you are now if I had to wait for you to drive across town whenever I needed you to do my laundry or clean my flat or cook my meals." He gazed at Merlin in confusion. "Didn't anybody tell you you'd be moving?" "No, they didn't," Merlin replied peevishly. "That's the kind of thing I'd expect you'd have your assistant tell me, except, oh, wait, I'm your assistant." Then, belatedly, Merlin's brain came to a startling realisation. "Wait, I'm supposed to live with you." Arthur looked as happy about the concept as Merlin felt. "Didn't you bother to ask my father what this job entailed before you accepted? Your duties don't end when we leave the office. You're on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You have to do whatever I tell you, whenever I tell you to do it." He smirked, and it looked far too gleeful for Merlin's comfort. Merlin was suddenly reminded of the poster from this morning, the one about slave labour. "For example, we'll start with you cleaning out the spare bedroom, after we go collect your things, of course." Merlin sighed. At least it would be better than living in his mother's guest bedroom. Arthur was absolutely no help with packing. He spent most of his time giving Merlin orders and making snide remarks. "Unicorn? Really?" he asked, spying the poster on Merlin's wall. "Really?" Merlin wadded up a few more shirts and tossed them in the box. "I've told you before, that's the environmental organisation where I volunteer. The ones who've been trying to stop your land development deal?" he reminded irritably. Then he added, with a touch of pride, "The United Kingdom Organisation for the Restoration of Nature." Arthur eyed him sceptically. "And you call yourselves Unicorn?" Merlin sighed and taped the box shut. "Well, otherwise we'd be called U-Corn, and that just sounds silly." Arthur lived in the penthouse suite of the Camelot Hotel, one of his father's more profitable investments. Despite the name, this was no cheesy themed hotel. There was no indoor jousting matches or Renaissance attired bellhops. Instead, the hotel capitalised on the splendour and grandeur inherent in the name. The stately lobby glittered with gold and crystal. Gilt furniture was arranged under the massive chandelier, and ornate frescoes decorated the expansive walls and arched ceiling. It was a palace truly worthy of its namesake. Arthur, however, didn't even bother to glance at his surroundings as he led Merlin through the large glass doors towards the lifts. He had to go back for his new assistant twice, since the idiot was too busy gaping in open-mouthed awe to bother walking more than 5 steps at a time. Merlin's reaction to Arthur's penthouse was much the same, though the style of Arthur's decor was decidedly different from the old-world splendour of the rest of the hotel. The flat occupied most of the top floor, its open floor plan interrupted only by Arthur's sleek, expensive furniture and the spiral staircase leading up to the roof. The only closed-off portion was the two bedrooms on one side, leaving the other three walls open, their unbroken line of windows giving a panoramic view of the London horizon. It was the kind of setup that Arthur liked to think reflected his status and accomplishments, not so much a reward as his rightful due for faithfully performing his duty to the company. Upon entering, Merlin immediately dropped his belongings where he stood and rushed to one of the windows, pressing his nose to the glass as he took in the red and gold of the September sunset. Arthur frowned. He'd make sure Merlin cleaned off his nose and handprint smudges later. "This is bloody brilliant!" Merlin exclaimed, his enthusiasm almost visibly seeping out of his pores. He dashed around the flat, running an almost reverent hand over the leather of Arthur's sofa and poking shamelessly through the cupboards in his kitchen. Arthur bit the inside of his cheek to keep himself from snapping about the invasion of privacy. Merlin might have no compunction about rifling through Arthur's flat as if it were his own, but it would take Arthur a while to get used to the fact that he was essentially being forced to share his private domain with a total stranger. Arthur's musings were interrupted when Merlin called from the foot of the spiral stair. "What's up here?" "That's the roof." Arthur had barely formed the words before Merlin was already shooting up the stairs as fast as his spindly legs could carry him, and Arthur was forced to follow. He emerged into the not-quite-fresh air characteristic of the heart of London and stopped to see Merlin looking like he'd just found the Holy Grail itself. "This is amazing!" he breathed, spinning in slow circles as if trying to take it all in at once. Arthur didn't see what was so fascinating about a giant flat slab of concrete. "What are you planning to do with it?" "Do with it?" Arthur asked, bemused. Now it was Merlin's turn to look confused. "You have all this space. Surely you plan on using it for something?" He perused the area again, muttering mostly to himself. "Maybe a garden?" Arthur was momentarily struck by the thought of himself with flowery gardening gloves and a trowel, hunched over azaleas like somebody's grandmother. "I hardly think I can find time in my busy schedule for gardening, Merlin. The only time I even come up here is when I need to take my helicopter." Merlin's eyes got comically wide. "You have a helicopter?" Arthur smirked, but didn't elaborate. "Would you like to see your new room?" As it turned out, Arthur didn't have to worry about Merlin cleaning out the spare bedroom after all. Arthur wasn't sure he'd ever met anybody with so few possessions as his new assistant. His meagre collection of clothes, mostly ratty t-shirts, barely took up an eighth of the closet space. It made Arthur inexplicably want to run out and buy the man at least 5 new suits. Arthur couldn't fathom how anyone could survive without the daily sensation of Armani against their skin. The room was large and sparsely furnished, since Arthur rarely had overnight guests. Well, at least not the kind who'd be using the spare bedroom in any case. He imagined the room would still look Spartan even after Merlin had managed to unpack all of his earthly belongings. Then Merlin snapped his unicorn poster up on the wall next to a specially commissioned Picasso replica, and Arthur thought that Spartan might be an improvement. On Merlin's second day on the job, there was a ceramic unicorn figurine on his desk. He glared darkly at the doors to Arthur's office, but just as he was about to drop the figurine into his empty bottom drawer, or possibly the trash bin, he reconsidered. The last thing Merlin wanted to see was Arthur's smug, malicious grin when he spotted the unicorn on top of the rubbish pile. When Arthur came out to give Merlin his instructions for the day, he spared an incredulous glance at the figurine's prominent display next to his monitor, but he didn't comment. Merlin ran all of the errands on Arthur's list, polished his shoes, picked up his dry cleaning, and battled the demonic copy machine for the better part of an hour. Whatever spare moments Merlin had were normally spent trying to bring up the land development deal, but Arthur either ignored him or made inane comments like asking if Unicorn only hired virgins. Merlin responded by not quite accidentally spilling coffee all over Arthur's finance reports. The next day, Merlin sighed when he spotted three more unicorn figurines on his desk. Arthur absently shifted the file in his grip, turning the corner to Morgana's office just in time to see Owain trying, unsuccessfully, to nonchalantly slip out the door. His hair was a mess, his tie was crooked, and the buttons of his shirt had been done up wrong. His shirt tail was hanging out his open fly. Arthur raised an eyebrow and Owain blushed, fit to put a tomato to shame, then dashed off as fast as he could without overtly running, trying frantically to put himself to rights along the way. By the time Arthur burst through Morgana's doors, she was blessedly decent. He'd waited a few moments outside Morgana's office because the last thing he wanted to see was his wicked stepsister with her blouse undone. She didn't even look up as he slapped the file down on her desk, too busy staring fixedly at her computer monitor. Arthur scowled, but before he could open his mouth, Morgana said, "Did you know there's a security camera in the 18th floor supply room?" Arthur's frown deepened. He frantically tried to remember if he'd had any private meetings with Sophia, or, admittedly, a few of the other office secretaries in that supply room. "No," he answered, really hoping this wasn't going where he suspected it was. Morgana smirked. "Neither do Gawain and Galahad." Arthur's ire rose. Was everyone in this sodding company fucking each other? "That's what you and Owain were in here doing, watching ill-begotten porn about your co-workers." Owain Morgana simply shrugged and continued to stare at the screen. Arthur let out a frustrated groan and reached over to yank the power cable from Morgana's monitor. He caught a flash of the screen before it blessedly went black. "And really, Morgana, Owain," Arthur continued, latching onto any subject that would drive out the image of the two interns going at it like rabbits in grainy black and white. "I should fire him, just on principle. I had hoped he had brains enough not to drop his trousers the first time you flashed your breasts at him, but clearly I underestimated his intelligence." "Or you underestimated the power of my breasts. I've been assured they're quite spectacular," she countered, grinning maniacally as Arthur grimaced and steadfastly refused to consider the impressiveness of his stepsister's cleavage. Really, Arthur should have known better than to get drawn into this kind of conversation with Morgana. She took too much delight in horrifying him to within an inch of his sanity. He always came away from their private meetings feeling like the inside of his head needed a good scrubbing out with the most powerful antiseptic money could buy. "Admit it," she continued. "You're just jealous I got to him first." Arthur had been assaulted with far too many traumatising images in the last 30 seconds to form a coherent retort, so he was left to sputter the first indignant thought that formed in his mind. "You did not!" 3 months ago," Morgana said pleasantly. Arthur eyed her sceptically, because he'd never known Morgana to date anyone longer than 3 weeks. Apparently reading his thoughts, she added, "We have an open relationship." Arthur narrowed his eyes and said in a tone that was not at all petulant, "He's not even that good." Morgana's expression reminded Arthur of how a cat might smile around a mouthful of canary. "Perhaps you just never gave him the right incentive to perform." Arthur opened his mouth to protest either the affront to his dignity
or the truly terrifying images he was now being forced to contemplate. But Morgana spoke first. Speaking of incentive, how are things working out with that new assistant of yours? Arthur flopped down into the chair across from Morgana's desk and let out an irritated sigh to disguise his relief at the change of subject. Oh, abysmally. He's quite possibly the worst assistant I've ever had. He can't be all that bad. He's only been here a week. He needs time to adjust. Arthur levelled Morgana with an incredulous glare. Yesterday, he tripped over a network cable and catapulted his coffee mug face down onto his keyboard. So? Accidents happen? That doesn't mean... Our network is wireless. Ah, Morgana said, not very successfully hiding her grin behind her hand. Well, perhaps what he needs is a gentler touch. Arthur eyeballed Morgana wearily.
If you're implying what I think you're implying, the answer's no. You'd probably wind up giving him a venereal disease, and I fail to see how that will improve his work performance.
Morgana's eye roll was epic. I mean, perhaps you need to try an approach that doesn't have all the finesse of a crazed grizzly. Ask him about his friends, or his hobbies, or compliment him once in a while. Maybe offer to buy him lunch and actually talk to him, instead of ordering him about all the time. Find a way to bond with him. You might find yourself actually liking him.
Arthur boggled at the thought. Are you saying I should seduce Merlin? Have you developed syphilis and finally gone mental?
Morgana's lips pursed. I'm just saying, Arthur, that it might be beneficial to develop a little mutual respect, for his sake as well as yours.
Arthur was loath to admit it, but she potentially had a point. It was impossible to miss that Merlin and Arthur mixed about as well as oil and water. Most of this was due to Merlin's blatant refusal to show Arthur the respect he clearly deserved. Maybe a shared activity or two would give Arthur a chance to impress upon his assistant Arthur's brilliance and prowess. And Merlin would finally acknowledge that he couldn't spend all afternoon ignoring Arthur's requests in favour of looking at lolcats or playing Bejeweled.
I'll take it under advisement, Arthur said, tossing the monitor cable into Morgana's hands.
And I'll be informing security that they need better firewalls on the CCTV feeds.
Arthur turned his back on Morgana's scowl, but she called his name when he reached the door. When he glanced back over his shoulder, she was looking suspiciously coy. By the way, if you're really not interested in Merlin, do you mind if I...
She wasn't serious. She couldn't possibly be serious.
This was Merlin.
All the same.
Arthur felt his fist grip the doorknob with white knuckles, and his voice was dangerously close to a growl as he said,
"Keep your claws out of him, Morgana."
Morgana's answering grin was eerily similar to the one she'd worn when they were 10 and she'd caught him sneaking handfuls of cookies before dinner. "Just checking," she said airily.
"Hunting," Merlin said, aghast. "You want to take me hunting?"
Arthur was nonplussed.
"Stop being such a girl, Merlin. It's good fun."
Merlin was quite sure his eyes were going to pop out of his head and roll around on the desk.
"Arthur, I'm a vegan,"
Arthur snorted dismissively.
"It's not as if I expect you to actually shoot anything. Just carry my pack and ammunition. And for once, do try and keep your mouth shut."
Hunting was a complete disaster. Whenever Merlin wasn't lecturing Arthur on the inalienable rights of cute fluffy bunnies to go on producing even more cute fluffy bunnies until the world was positively overrun with large-eared rodents, he was doing his best to scare away all the game. He crashed through the underbrush like a drunken rhinoceros. He dropped all of Arthur's crossbow bolts in a crash that sent a flock of birds into startled flight. And the one time Arthur had miraculously spotted a doe through the trees, Merlin had very loudly snapped a branch underfoot and then somehow managed to look both defiant and innocent in the face of Arthur's murderous frustration. Still, Arthur thought the whole thing was mostly worth it when the next morning he made Merlin fetch Arthur's coffee in a mug that read, "Meat is murder. Tasty, tasty murder." Merlin's ensuing glare was priceless. In the end, Arthur decided just having lunch with his assistant would be a better attempt at this whole bonding thing. He never really intended for it to become a regular event, but after the first few times, Arthur found he'd grown rather addicted to seeing what spectacularly hilarious faces he could get Merlin to make just by revealing the contents of his lunch. The one and only time Arthur brought a veal sandwich, and Merlin threatened murder if he ever brought it again, Arthur had to marvel at the irony. Still, Merlin seemed equally amused by Arthur's reactions to whatever tofu, soy, seaweed concoction he'd thrown together, so it was really a win-win situation. The lunch meetings failed to improve Merlin's work performance, but at least they were entertaining. 2 weeks into his job as Arthur's assistant, Merlin replaced the poster outside Arthur's office door. Gone was the regal lion, and in its place was a rather put-upon-looking lion, with a cub climbing all over its face. Underneath, the poster read, "Nepotism. We promote family values here. Almost as often as we promote family members." The poster was up for 2 days without so much as a glare from Arthur, which was very disappointing, and also hilarious. Arthur may not have noticed the change, but almost everyone else had. The rest of the office regarded Merlin as either crazy or brilliant. Bartholomew, the terrified intern, was convinced that Merlin had brass balls the size of pie plates. Then Morgana stopped by. She eyed the poster and raised one perfectly sculpted brow in Merlin's direction. Merlin just shrugged in what he hoped was an apologetic manner. He figured she knew the poster's sentiment wasn't directed at her, but she was still very scary, and Merlin knew better than to piss her off. Morgana stepped into Arthur's office, and there was a blessed 30 seconds of silence behind the deceptively placid closed doors before a very unmistakable voice bellowed, "Merlin!" Merlin smirked, already beating a hasty retreat into the break room. Arthur's response to what he internally referred to as the nepotism incident was to place another, very large poster on the wall, right across from Merlin's desk, depicting a Great Dane towering over a Chihuahua. This one said, "Intimidation. No one can make you feel inferior without your consent, but you'd be a fool to withhold that from your superiors." Merlin had been in the office for 5 minutes before Arthur's Excalibur let out the irritatingly cheerful chirp that signalled a new text. He smirked when he read Merlin's words. "I'm pretty sure these posters were intended as jolts, not royal edicts." Arthur's answer was to send Merlin for more coffee. It really wasn't much of an excuse, given that Merlin was something of a wizard with the coffee machine, and Arthur had become a bit of an addict. Then he changed Merlin's desktop background to a picture of one horse sniffing another horse's arse with the subtitle, "Flattery. If you want to get to the top, prepare to kiss a lot of the bottom." Arthur used one of Merlin's brightly coloured post-its to scroll out the message. "They're not edicts, but they're good advice," and stuck it to Merlin's monitor. When Merlin brought Arthur his coffee, he was wearing an obscenely large grin as he asked, "So, does that make you the horse's arse in this scenario?" Arthur scowled into his coffee. Perhaps his plan had backfired. Once winter hit, Merlin learned very quickly that whenever it snowed, Arthur would want stew. Merlin had tried on several occasions, and with varying levels of unsuccess, to substitute a hearty vegetable soup. Eventually, Merlin decided that drastic measures needed to be taken. Merlin kept his face carefully blank, trying to look harmless and innocent and completely above suspicion as he spooned the stew into Arthur's bowl. He probably failed miserably, But luckily Arthur was too busy scrolling through the latest market forecasts on his Excalibur BlackBerry iPhone thing to notice. He was so enraptured with the financial reports, he'd already taken several bites before he paused, reluctantly shifting half his focus to the meal in front of him. "What kind of meat is this?" he asked curiously. "It has a very strange texture." Merlin took a bite of his own stew and replied in a cautiously neutral tone, "It's pork." Arthur scoffed, his attention now fully focused on the bowl. "This isn't pork, it's too spongy, and the flavour's all wrong. What is it? It's, He took another bite and pondered. Merlin caught the exact moment Arthur puzzled it out, his face shifting from mildly intrigued to horrified realisation. "This is tofu, isn't it?" Merlin smirked and helped himself to another spoonful. "Stop being such a sissy and eat it. It's not that bad, really." Arthur looked like he was barely restraining his gag reflex. "Not that bad? Merlin, I would rather eat rat stew than this vile concoction." Merlin frowned. "That can be arranged," he muttered darkly. "Look, I'm not making separate meals for the both of us, so it's this or nothing." Arthur's eyes narrowed dangerously. "If you starve me to death, you'll no longer have an employer, and therefore you'll no longer have a job." Merlin didn't bother to temper the glare he shot across the table. "Believe me, Arthur, that's not much of a threat." Arthur's mouth twisted furiously before he spoke, his voice close to a shout. "Well, maybe I should do you a favour and sack you then." That finally pushed Merlin's temper over the edge. Throwing down his spoon, he stood and yelled, "Go ahead! I never wanted to work for your arrogant arse anyway." Arthur stood and met Merlin's gaze. "Good! I'll be able to hire a decent assistant for a change." "Fine, fine. Arse, moron. Slam, slam." Merlin fumed in his room for a solid 6 hours before his roaring stomach overruled his roaring fury, and he slunk back into the kitchen. He hiked himself up onto Arthur's expensive granite countertop and sullenly ate his stew, making sure to leave as many greasy fingerprints on the polished stone as he could. It wasn't like he'd be cleaning it up tomorrow. Merlin had finished half the bowl when Arthur's bedroom door opened and he stepped out, wearing his pyjama pants and Oxford blue t-shirt, looking deliciously sleep-rumpled, despite the fact his slightly bloodshot eyes showed he'd been doing about as much sleeping as Merlin had. It made Merlin want to choke Arthur with his spoon out of spite. Arthur spared Merlin an inscrutable glance, then proceeded to completely ignore Merlin's presence as he puttered around the kitchen. Merlin ignored him back as best he could, but his traitorous eyes refused to obey his commands and seemed drawn to Arthur of their own volition. He spent an embarrassingly long time sneaking glances at the pillow creases on Arthur's cheek and the way his hair stuck straight up on one side. And then, very belatedly, Merlin realised Arthur had just prepared his own bowl of leftover stew. Arthur hiked himself up onto the countertop alongside Merlin, bare feet dangling above the ground and spoon in hand. Merlin was openly staring now as Arthur poked his spoon tentatively into his bowl and began picking out tofu chunks, then depositing them into the bowl in Merlin's hand. This went on for several silent minutes, until Arthur was apparently satisfied that all nefarious bits of soy product had been safely shoveled into Merlin's bowl, and he took a healthy bite of the mushrooms and vegetables left over. "You know, it wouldn't kill you to make me a steak once in a while," he said into his bowl. Merlin raised an eyebrow. "No, I suppose it wouldn't." Arthur hazarded a sidelong glance in Merlin's direction, and their gazes held for a few moments before they both dissolved into sloppy half-grins. Arthur nudged Merlin's ankle with one bare foot and said, "Eat your horrid stew. You look like a bloody stick figure." Merlin's grin widened and they ate the rest of the stew in happy silence. It was a cold, rainy February morning when Arthur opened up his office to find a rolled-up poster on his desk. He unrolled it to view the giant image of a luminescent pearl and the words underneath that read, "Beauty. If you're attractive enough on the outside, people will forgive you for being irritating to the core." Attached to the poster was a neon pink post-it with Merlin's distinctive scrawl. "Fine, you win. Consider this sufficient flattery for you to stop leaving bloody unicorn figurines all over my desk." Arthur smiled. He knew the My Little Ponies would finally get a reaction. "Merlin!" Arthur shouted into the flat. "Where's my brown jacket with the silver buttons?" Arthur continued, rifling through the mess Merlin had made of his closet, and waited for Merlin to stammer out his answer. When the flat remained stubbornly silent, Arthur shouted, "Merlin, you daft twit, my jacket, where is it?" When Arthur still didn't get a response, he gave up the search and stomped his way to Merlin's room. "So help me, Merlin, if you've lost my favourite jacket, I'll..." But Arthur never got to finish his threat, because when he opened Merlin's door, he realised Merlin wasn't there. Arthur could see a pot of water boiling on the stove, so Merlin couldn't have possibly gone far. A quick perusal of the flat revealed a shaft of light filtering through the partially closed trapdoor that led to the roof. Curious, Arthur ascended the spiral staircase and climbed up onto the roof. Once he emerged into the warm spring sunlight, he spotted Merlin fussing with a rather large tent made of white netting that definitely hadn't been there before. "Merlin?" Merlin's head snapped up in surprise. "Arthur, what are you... I didn't... Ah!" Merlin apparently lost his battle with the netting, getting it twisted around his feet and tripping in the mess. He fell to the ground with a spectacular crash as the sheet of netting and two of the support poles fell with him, one of them bouncing off Merlin's thick skull before skittering to the concrete. "Ow!" Merlin groaned pathetically from the knotted heap. Arthur unceremoniously hauled Merlin to his feet and began the epic struggle to disentangle his limbs from the netting. "Before I met you, Merlin, I never thought miracles were possible." Merlin smiled blindingly at him, one arm contorted in a way that couldn't be comfortable. "Really?" Arthur allowed himself a small smirk and attempted to gently extricate Merlin's arm without dislocating it. "Yes, really. If I hadn't seen it for myself, I never would have believed it possible for someone with your level of coordination to survive this long without spectacularly killing themselves. Congratulations, you're a miracle." Merlin scowled and flailed his way out from underneath the rest of the netting on his own. "Care to tell me why you've chosen to risk your life on my rooftop?" Merlin scrubbed a hand through his unruly hair, making it stick up in even more crazy tufts. It was supposed to be a surprise." At Arthur's raised eyebrows, Merlin continued in a rush. "Look, I know you didn't want one, but I couldn't let all this space go to waste, and I figured if you didn't like it, well, it's not like you ever come up here anyway, and..." "Merlin," Arthur said, "did you make me a garden?" Merlin's cheeks tinged pink. "Sort of." Interest peaked. Arthur pulled back the wall of netting and stepped under the canopy. There were two tables running the length of the tent, each lined with rows of small yellow flowers. There was another table at the end of the enclosure that was piled high with empty jam jars topped with cheesecloth. And inside each jar was a tiny fluttering insect. "So, maybe not a garden in the traditional sense, but a butterfly garden is still technically a garden." Arthur's voice was stuck somewhere between incredulous and mildly insulted. "You built me a butterfly garden." Merlin let out an annoyed huff from somewhere over Arthur's left shoulder, and Arthur didn't need to see him to know he was making his patented face of pained endurance. "Before you open your mouth and dissolve into full-scale prat, let me explain why this isn't the affront to your rugged masculinity that you think it is." Arthur crossed his arms and shifted his attention to his assistant. "All right then, enlighten me." Merlin picked up one of the pots housing the yellow flowers. This is the Mortius flower. Mortius bellorus, actually. It only grows in the undeveloped area south of London. The area you plan to turn into a new shopping centre. Oh, here we go again, Arthur groaned. It seemed like every time he turned around, Merlin was finding some way to bring up the land development deal. Arthur had even gone so far as to show Merlin the figures, to make him understand how very much money the Pendragon Corporation stood to make from this deal. But even that hadn't managed to shut him up. Arthur was about to open his mouth and tell Merlin to forget it, because he simply didn't want to hear any more. But then Merlin's hand clamped over his mouth, and Arthur was really too stunned to do anything but stare at his assistant. It was purely due to the shock of Merlin's impudence and had nothing to do with the warmth of Merlin's hand or the fact that Arthur could smell the lingering scent of soap on Merlin's skin. Merlin continued to prattle on as if Arthur hadn't interrupted him. The Mortius flower is the only food source of the silver-spotted skipper, which is a declining species. If you tear up all the land where the flower can grow, the butterflies will die of starvation. Arthur pried Merlin's hand off his face and said, I still don't see why I should care. At Merlin's utterly crestfallen look, Arthur almost wished to take his words back, but he kept his mouth stubbornly silent. Merlin was nothing if not persistent, however, so he stomped his way over to the stack of jars and grabbed the top one, thrusting it into Arthur's hand. You should care, because you'll be wiping out an entire species. Forgive me for thinking that should matter. I thought I saw something in you. Something that made you better. Made you more than just another suit. Maybe I was wrong. Merlin stared straight into Arthur's eyes as he spoke, and Arthur could feel the challenge issued by his words. Arthur frowned and stood up a little straighter under Merlin's scrutiny. My responsibility is to the people of my company, not some insect. Saving this butterfly won't put food on my employees' tables. You're the one in charge of the project, Arthur, Merlin countered. Surely there's a way for you to do both. Arthur spent some time contemplating Merlin's ridiculously earnest face. Almost as an afterthought, he turned his attention to the jar in his hands. The tiny butterfly inside wasn't quite what Arthur expected. It was brown, with white and orange spots on its wings, making it look more like a moth than a butterfly. It was also horridly disproportionate, with a large body and a giant head and rather two small wings that beat frantically as it flailed about inside the jar. Arthur couldn't help the small smile that tugged at the corner of his lips. He could see why Merlin felt such a connection to the ridiculous little bugger. It's rather ugly for a butterfly. Shouldn't it at least be blue or yellow or something? It's an insect, not a sports car, Merlin replied defensively. Just because it's not shiny and flashy like you doesn't make it any less important. Arthur snuck a sly glance at his assistant, who was busily studying the butterfly's uncoordinated flight path around the jar. His lips were perused in a way very much resembling a girlish pout. Why am I not at all surprised? You've made it a personal quest to save a bunch of butterflies and flowers. Merlin ignored the jibe and smiled. I think she likes you. Arthur turned his attention back to the jar to find that the butterfly had alighted on the bit of cheesecloth underneath the place where Arthur's index finger had curled over the lip of the jar. He could feel its wings fluttering against the pad of his finger. When he looked back up, Merlin was wearing such a soft expression that Arthur had to stare and try to place it. It wasn't often that anyone looked at Arthur with such unguarded affection. Arthur's veins were flooded with an unfamiliar warmth. He cleared his throat abruptly and thrust the jar back into Merlin's grasp. I'm sorry, Merlin. My primary duty is to the company. Oddly, Merlin's soft smile didn't falter. I know you'll find a way, Arthur.
I believe in you. Arthur didn't have the heart to tell him that even if he found a way, it would likely result in a loss of profits, and his father would never stand for that. Arthur was loath to admit it, but Merlin was rather good at guerrilla warfare. Merlin had launched his covert operation several weeks ago. It had started out as something fairly harmless. He would slip conservation articles into Arthur's financial reports. He signed Arthur up for several mailing lists, meaning Arthur's email and phone had been inundated with messages devoted to the silver-spotted skipper. He brought in flower cuttings from his rooftop garden to brighten up the office, and even set Arthur's computer to redirect him to the skipper Wikipedia page every time Arthur tried to log in to Yahoo Games, which happened quite a lot, actually. None of this, however, prepared Arthur for Merlin's grand stealth attack. Arthur stabbed furiously at his intercom button. Oh, Merlin, where are the blasted reports for the Mercia merger? The meeting starts in 10 minutes. Merlin's tinny voice replied through the speaker. They're in your top left desk drawer. And no, it doesn't. Arthur retrieved the folder, answering distractedly. What are you on about, Merlin? You're making even less sense than usual. I mean, no. The meeting doesn't start in 10 minutes. It's cancelled. Now Merlin had Arthur's full attention. You cancelled my meeting? It was Morgana's meeting, actually, and she's the one who cancelled it. Merlin threw open the door to his office. Why wasn't I informed? Merlin smiled, looking entirely too complacent. Because it only got cancelled about 15 minutes ago, and I've been too busy arranging your other meeting to tell you. What other meeting? Arthur asked, suspicious. Merlin was being far too efficient. The one I've been arranging. Really, Arthur, are you even listening? Arthur glared. It's times like this I truly wish the stocks were still a socially acceptable form of punishment. You just want an excuse to throw things at my head, Merlin replied airily. We should really be going. Your helicopter is waiting on the roof. Arthur blinked. You called in my helicopter for a meeting? Merlin didn't pause as he continued to prod Arthur into the lift. Well, I know how busy you are, and the meeting's rather far away. 15 minutes later, as they were hovering over the future site of the Pendragon Corporation's new shopping centre, Arthur glared at Merlin and said, There's no meeting, is there? Merlin's grin was completely unapologetic. There are definite advantages to being the person in control of your schedule. I'm surprised I didn't think of this a long time ago, actually. They landed near the edge of a crystal blue lake, linked by those familiar yellow flowers. The sun was shining, as if it couldn't wait for spring to tip over into summer. The birds were chirping and insects were buzzing, and a cool breeze wafted over the water, and Merlin was prattling on about whatever it was he wanted to show Arthur. But Arthur wasn't paying attention to any of it, because 5 seconds after landing, his Excalibur had beeped with 2 messages. One was from his father, demanding to know why he wasn't at the office, and another from Morgana, saying she'd take care of it. And oh, this day just kept getting better and better. Arthur, you're not even listening. That's because I'm trying to figure out how to explain to my father that I was abducted by my personal assistant, Arthur shouted, frantically texting Morgana in the hopes she wouldn't wind up making things worse. Arthur was halfway done when Merlin uttered a grunt of frustration and grabbed the phone out of Arthur's hand. Arthur could only watch in helpless, numbing shock as it sailed in a high arc through the air. It fell into the lake with a soft plop. For a few seconds, it seemed even the birds and insects had all been stunned into silence. Arthur wasn't sure there were words in the English language capable of adequately expressing his rage, so he settled for stating the bloody obvious.
you threw my phone into the lake? Merlin crossed his arms defiantly. You can get another one. Arthur's volume rose to impressive decibels. No, I can't! That was an Excalibur! It was the only one in existence and you threw it in the bloody lake! Merlin failed to look suitably contrite. Oh, well, now you know how the silver-spotted skippers feel. Arthur felt his lips thin and his face go red with fury. His fists balled at his sides. He twisted one hand into the collar at the back of Merlin's shirt and began unceremoniously hauling him towards the water's edge. Merlin stumbled along under Arthur's guidance. What? Arthur, just... what are you doing? If you're so interested in communing with nature, perhaps I should hurl you in the bloody lake. Merlin frantically dug his heels into the mud. Wait, this isn't Arthur. Arthur, relax. This isn't going to get your phone back. No, but it'll make me feel better. At the water's edge, Arthur gave Merlin a harsh shove and watched his assistant teeter helplessly forward, arms pinwheeling wildly. He had a moment of smug satisfaction before one of Merlin's flailing limbs caught Arthur's sleeve and they both went crashing into the freezing water. The moment Arthur broke the surface, he was already sputtering in incoherent fury. Then Merlin had the nerve to turn to him and say, "While we're in here, want to fish out your phone?" Arthur growled and shoved Merlin's head under the water. Merlin kicked him in the shin. By the time they dragged themselves ashore, they were both shivering and exhausted and covered in mud and pond scum. Arthur pulled the itchy wool blanket tighter around his shoulders as the helicopter soared almost silently over London. Arthur watched the buildings roll by, mostly to keep himself from looking at the drowned rat sulking in the seat across from him. Arthur had never known Merlin to be this quiet since the day they met. The fact that he wasn't speaking a word told Arthur all he needed to know about how upset Merlin was. Eventually he heaved a sigh and said, "This really means a lot to you, doesn't it?" Arthur could see the sarcastic remark on the tip of Merlin's tongue, but Merlin instead simply replied, "Yes," and continued to glare sullenly at the buildings below, as if they'd done him some great personal injustice. Another several moments hung heavy and silent between them, and then Arthur said, "I can't promise anything, but maybe I can look into donating a portion of the land as a nature reserve, or something." Merlin's stony expression slowly melted into a smile. "I always knew there was a heart buried underneath all that Armani," Merlin said quietly. Arthur felt his own lips turn up reluctantly. "Yes, well, you still need to do a great deal of laundry when we get home. We both smell like rotten fish." Merlin wasn't sure at what point their regular lunch meetings graduated to actual restaurants instead of simply hanging out in Arthur's stupidly large office, but he was fairly certain it was around the time he threatened to plan a stealth mission to replace Arthur's Polish sausage with soy sausage. Arthur, of course, had ridiculously lavish tastes, so they usually went to restaurants where patrons had to sell their firstborn child into indentured servitude for an entree that would easily starve a mouse. Merlin complained about this, mostly on principle, because the food was actually quite good. The waitstaff knew their orders by heart by now. As soon as they were seated, Arthur took the lemon from Merlin's water and squeezed it into Arthur's glass, followed quickly by his own, because, for some reason, Arthur enjoyed the mouth-puckering sensation. He eyed Merlin over the rim of his glass and said, "Care to explain to me why I spent half the morning convincing civil engineers that you weren't attempting a hostile takeover of their department?" Merlin cringed around his mouthful of honeyed bread roll. He was hoping Arthur wouldn't hear about that. "They were planning to put a bloody great fountain in the middle of the lake," he protested defensively. "Do you have any idea what that would do to the fish spawning cycle? Not to mention the waterfowl population. Arthur's no doubt witty rejoinder was cut short when their plates were set in front of them. The braised lamb and grilled truffles for Arthur, and the chicken, tomato and cucumber salad for Merlin. Merlin grimaced at the expected but still unwelcome meat and pushed his plate closer to Arthur. With something like exasperated fondness, Arthur shuffled his own roll onto Merlin's plate to replace the one Merlin had already scarfed down and said, "Still, maybe you should refrain from taking your coffee with you next time I send you down there to evaluate the project estimates." Merlin sighed and continued loading his fork with the truffles from Arthur's plate to replace the chicken Arthur was spearing from Merlin's salad. "Look, that was not my fault. I trip over that table leg every time I have to go down there, so they really should have known better than to leave their blueprints in a potentially vulnerable position. Maybe you should go down there yourself. But no, you took one look at that feng shui nightmare, and now you're too afraid. You'll fall and develop a debilitating injury that'll put a premature end to your illustrious future fencing career, or whatever your excuse is." Unloading the truffles from his fork, Merlin looked down at his plate, ready to tuck into his salad, and said, "Chicken." Arthur raised an eyebrow. "What? I beg your..." "No, Arthur. Chicken." Merlin pointed at the lump of meat with his fork. "Oh, right." Arthur distractedly speared the slice of chicken and popped it in his mouth, chewing thoughtfully for a moment before saying, "So, I should warn the engineers you won't stop pestering them till they've removed the fountain then." Merlin rolled his eyes but couldn't help the way his mouth turned up wryly at the corner. "Yeah, probably." Merlin was dead asleep when Arthur burst into his room, shirtless and barefoot, in only his pyjama pants, and yanked down the covers on Merlin's bed. Merlin jerked awake, took in Arthur's state of dress and the fact that it was fucking 6 in the morning, and groaned into his pillow. "Oh dear God, not another one," he moaned. "It's too early for me to be kicking out another of your trysts." Arthur ignored him and flopped down onto Merlin's bed like a giant floppy thing. It was possible that Merlin's brain was not quite fully awake. "It's never too early for a man to want his own bed to himself, Merlin," Arthur said, and Merlin refrained from pointing out that Arthur certainly had no compunction about taking over Merlin's bed the morning after each of his one-night stands. Though he never took over Merlin's bed in the way that Merlin sometimes, very rarely, thought he might want. Just a little. Merlin sighed. "Oh, at least tell me it's a man this time." Arthur's malicious glee was all the answer Merlin needed, and he stifled a groan. He had a habit of unintentionally making women burst into hysterics before they were out the door. Arthur, of course, found this hilarious. "I made sure to wake her up on my way out, so she should be dressed by the time you get there," Arthur said, and Merlin thought bitterly that Arthur had no right to sound so jovial at bloody sunrise, especially when he'd gotten laid, and Merlin obviously hadn't. "How considerate of you," Merlin mumbled. "I'm sure she'll appreciate being fully clothed when she gets tossed out on her arse." Merlin paused to allow Arthur the eye roll Merlin knew he couldn't resist, but then a thought struck his slowly awakening brain. "Wait, didn't you call me on your date last night?" He propped himself up on one elbow and stared bleedily at Arthur. "You pretended to be on a business call because you were bored with this girl's conversation." Arthur practically leered. "It wasn't her conversation I was interested in." Merlin collapsed back into his pillow, longing for sleep or death, whichever meant he didn't have to leave his bed. "I'll go if you can remember her name." There was a pause long enough for Merlin to gather the faint hope of victory. He raised an eyebrow at Arthur, but the annoyingly sunny smirk never left his face. "You'll go because it's your job," Arthur countered. "You know, contrary to what you may believe, I'm not actually Pepper Potts. Don't be ridiculous. I'd never confuse you with Pepper, Arthur snorted. You look much better in a skirt. Oi! Merlin snapped, launching his pillow at Arthur's face. The Pratt easily deflected it, of course. It was one time, and you swore never to speak of it again. Arthur, now laughing and holding Merlin's pillow hostage, started shoving Merlin out of his own bed. I made no such promise. Now go, he ordered with a rather forceful kick. And don't make this girl cry like you did the last one. Merlin grumbled as he stood, and he glanced back just in time to see a half-naked Arthur roll into the warm spot Merlin had just vacated and bury his face in Merlin's pillow with a satisfied sigh. Merlin knew from experience that by the time Merlin returned, Arthur would be asleep, his golden, toned skin glowing in the light of sunrise, his limbs sprawled out over the sheets, as if he were as comfortable in Merlin's bed as he was in his own. Merlin wondered what he could possibly have done in a past life that would earn him this kind of punishment. There were good parts to the job, and bad parts. And then there were parts that made Merlin feel like a 10-pound lead weight had just been dropped on his chest. Getting to look and never, ever touch. That was definitely one of the worst parts. They were arguing over yet another horrid tofu creation when Merlin's arse started playing the theme tune to Doctor Who. Gwen! Merlin answered the phone, triumph already in his voice. Back me up here. Arthur says... Merlin abruptly came to a halt, standing frozen with the phone to his ear, the wide smile slowly melting from his face. Without conscious thought, Arthur rose from the table and was halfway to Merlin's side when Merlin waved him off. Merlin smiled again, though it looked decidedly different from his smile of a moment before. This one looked forced, and a touch brittle. That's really great, Gwen. Congratulations to you both. Merlin turned his back on Arthur and continued quietly. No, I'm fine, and of course I'll be there. It's just, I'm a little shocked, I guess. 3 months is coming up awfully fast. Merlin ran a hand through his hair and Arthur saw his shoulders sag a little. Right, I do know how badly you always wanted a summer wedding. Merlin sighed, and even without looking at his face, Arthur could tell he was wearing a rueful smile. Listen, Gwen, I'm really, really happy for you. Give Lance a hug for me, and I'll take you both out tomorrow to celebrate. Right, yes, uh-huh. See you then. Slowly, Merlin clicked the phone shut, and there was a moment of heavy, awful silence before Merlin turned. Watery smile not at all convincing as he announced with a pathetic attempt at his usual level of enthusiasm. My best friends are getting married. Their eyes held for a moment, but then Arthur had to look away from what he saw there. Right then, he said flatly. Guess this calls for a celebration. He headed to the cabinet and pulled out the bottle of scotch he'd been saving for a special occasion. He took out a couple of tumblers and poured 3 fingers into each glass. He didn't miss the grim set of Merlin's mouth as he handed over one of the glasses and said, very sensibly, "Let's get drunk." Half an hour and only a fifth of scotch later, they were sitting up on the roof facing Merlin's shabby garden, the cold concrete wall at their backs a stark contrast to the heavy warmth of Merlin's head on Arthur's shoulder. The uncharacteristic moroseness had vanished from Merlin's face as soon as the alcohol took hold. He had given up his cheerful pretense and settled into explaining his view of the situation with the same kind of indignant, insubordinate tone he used when pointing out the many and varied ways he believed Arthur was being a stubborn arse. It was surprisingly comforting. I really am happy for her. Him. Both of them. I am. He slurred, as if Arthur had been protesting his words. And all right, there was that whole awkward situation where Gwen had a crush on me and I had a crush on Lancelot, but that was ages ago. We're over that. They're my mates. And of course I want them to be happy. It's just, it's not fair. I deserve a wedding too, damn it. Arthur practically choked on his scotch. He raised an incredulous eyebrow, mind reeling at the thought of Merlin in a white dress and veil. Don't worry, Merlin. I'm sure you'll make someone a lovely wife someday. As long as your husband doesn't expect any decent cooking or cleaning out of you, that is. Merlin spared a drunken glare before barreling on, working himself up into a good rant. I think I've suffered enough in my life. And here he made a very demonstrative wave of his half-empty glass in Arthur's vague direction, but continued on before Arthur could properly chastise him. Karma owes me a hell of a lot by now. I'm not asking for Prince Charming or anything, just someone who's nice and generous and clever and has a great sense of humour and has all the same ideals and is a good listener and brings me soup when I'm sick and brings me flowers for no reason, oh, and kisses well, and looks good naked. Although that last one's really, really more of a bonus than a requirement. Arthur rolled his eyes. Right, clearly you're not asking for much. And okay, so I'm not rich and gorgeous or anything. Another vague gesture in Arthur's direction, and this time Arthur felt his chest puff up just a little. But it's not like I'm a horrible catch, Merlin continued, outraged. I've got these ears, but if I'm not grotesque or anything. And I'm actually quite good in bed. Arthur choked again, and then decided it would be much safer just to set his glass aside for now. Not that I get much chance to practice. Oh, the last time I had sex was... Merlin nearly went cross-eyed, trying to drunkenly count on his fingers. God, it was 8 months ago when I started this job. You remember Owen from marketing? You can ask him. He'll say I'm good. Arthur scowled. Now he really was going to fire that man. Maybe you should get Owen to write an advertising campaign for your skills. Arthur's tone was not the slightest bit peevish. Really? Merlin snorted, then asserted with all the enthusiastic earnestness of the very, very drunk. If I did, then I'd have men lined up around the block for me. I can do things with my tongue that would make your eyes roll back in your head. Arthur swallowed and tried incredibly hard to shake the sudden images that sprang to his mind. Seriously, anyone would want me. You'd even want me, if you weren't such a prat. And all right, Merlin had clearly entered the delusional state of his inebriation, because while Arthur could admit that there was a certain kind of idiotic charm about Merlin that some might appreciate, he was still Merlin, the worst assistant Arthur had ever had, and Arthur definitely did not want to bed the man. No matter how curious he was about the things Merlin could do with his tongue. And Arthur probably should have said at least some of that aloud, instead of staring dumbly down and ostensibly contemplating Merlin's rather soft-looking hair. Because of Arthur's prolonged silence, Merlin's head came up off Arthur's shoulder. He turned to fix Arthur with an inquisitive stare, head cocked and eyes glazed with alcohol. He could practically hear the gears in Merlin's head, fuzzily grinding through the alcoholic sludge of his brain before they abruptly came to a halt. Oh, Merlin said. Then he grabbed Arthur's head and pulled him into a horribly sloppy, messy kiss. Arthur froze, dumbfounded. The kiss lasted all of 2 seconds before Merlin's mouth slid away and he slumped against Arthur's shoulder, passed out from only 2.5 glasses of scotch. By the time Arthur recovered from the shock, Merlin was snoring softly against his chest, and Arthur was steadfastly ignoring the way the breeze felt intolerably cold against the lingering warmth of his lips. He needed to haul Merlin inside before they both caught a chill, and he needed to unwrap his arms from his assistant's shoulders, and he needed to pray that in the morning, Merlin wouldn't remember a thing.